Hey y'all, it's Kez, and I'm back with another episode of New Pronouns, Who Dis? How's it going? I'm doing good, for the most part. I just had top surgery a little over a week ago, last Monday, and it is Wednesday of the following week. It has been quite the challenging ride, let me tell you that. I knew that it wasn't going to be easy, right? But it definitely has been a lot tougher than I had originally prepared myself for, but I'm very happy for the progress that I've made and where I'm at now. I mean, I finally feel like stable and comfortable enough to be sitting here recording a podcast, so I guess that's very positive. There was a moment in time in the past week where I was like, I don't even know how I'm gonna live my life again. maybe sounds a little extreme, but like I said, it definitely was a lot more challenging than I had originally anticipated, I guess, especially because I've always had a high tolerance for pain. And so when I was going into this and seeing, you know, everybody else's journey, right, doing the comparison, which is never healthy or good, but just, you know, checking out everybody else's journey and their progress through a top surgery procedure similar to mine, they just kind of seem to be taking it in stride. And, you know, nice little reminder of the fact that, you know, people just put on the internet what is, you know, convenient and positive and all the highlights. Though I do have like actual close friends who have also gone through top surgery in a similar way that I have, and was able to get some good realistic information from them, I still kind of had this idea that it was going to be more of a breeze than it turned out to be for me. But I feel like I'm finally like coming through on the other side. I know that I have a long journey yet to go, a lot of patience that I'm gonna have to muster, a lot more healing to do, but I finally feel like I'm on like a positive like track up. And I know that I'm gonna have to be patient and anticipate, you know, the fact that this is going to probably continue to be a roller coaster and not, you know, a nice linear or, you know, nice casual climb back to normal. So I'd like to start off this podcast to kind of tell about my experience. I'm going to try to keep it short and sweet and not get too detailed because I don't necessarily know if people care to hear all the grody details, but I wanted to give like a realistic overview of what the experience has been for me. So anybody else, you know, considering getting double incision, top surgery, or will be in the future or coming up or what have you, that, you know, you can kind of get an idea of what to expect and not just, you know, the exciting, you know, results that you're eventually going to get, the nice healed photos that everybody posts, but like the dirty details and like so you can mentally, emotionally, physically prepare yourself for that. And then after I kind of discussed that little bit of a journey, I got some raw emotional stuff that I want to kind of throw out there that I think is also an important thing to share with everybody. And yeah, so let's get started on that. So I was very excited to wake up, you know, last Monday morning, and knowing that was going to be the last day with these sacks of fat on my chest. And so it's very, very exciting. You know how they always say how, you know, getting up in the morning is so difficult sometimes, but, you know, if you're going on like a trip or doing something exciting, you get up in the snap of a finger and, you know, you're energized, you're ready to go. And that's kind of how it was for me. We woke up at like 4 a.m. and, you know, typically I'd be dragging myself out of bed and hemming and hawing and being some type of way. But this was a big life-changing moment for me. And so I was like, let's go, let's do this. I could barely like open my eyes, but my emotional, mental capacity was there, and I was just very excited. So we get to the hospital, and since my arrival time was something ungodly, like 6:30 a.m., I can't remember the exact time, but very early, there was really nobody else there, and so I was, you know, checked in right away, got back to a room pretty quickly, met, you know, the nurse that was going to be taking care of me, met the entire, most of the team that was going to be in the surgical room. Everybody was very pleasant and kind, and just instilled a lot of confidence in me going into the procedure, which was very important because I'm a generally anxious person as it is. And, you know, going under anesthesia and having such a big procedure happening, like, obviously I was nervous, right? I think that's goes for just about anybody who's ever had any sort of surgery or major procedure like this. The surgeon, Dr. Krukoff, came in. She's enthusiastic as ever, and, you know, did all the markings with the blue marker all over my chest, and just, like I said, just really instilled a lot of confidence in me. She just was like, this is going to go really well. I can already tell, you know, by, you know, just what I'm looking at and the lines that I'm making. And so, you know, going into it, I was very already like anticipating, like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. They gave me a little something to ease a little bit of the anxiety that I had, and then rolled me back into the room, the surgical room. And there were so many people in there. Everybody's like bustling, you know, running back and forth across the room. Obviously, they probably weren't running, but they're, you know, walking quickly. And I remember just sitting there and just kind of laughing and commenting on how everybody was just so busy in there. And I was just yapping. I can't tell you exactly or remember exactly the stuff that I was saying, but I know that I was just like barely taking a breath and just yapping and laughing. So whatever they gave me was some good stuff. They put the mask over me to probably just like start relaxing me, right? Right before they were gonna like inject me with the whatever they do for anesthesia. And I remember I'm still yapping with this mask on my face, and I hear one of the people in there, nurses or whoever was in there, and they are like, they're not taking deep enough breath. And I laughed because I knew I was just yapping. And so I took two like super long, obnoxious, drawn out breaths and then busted out laughing again after the fact. And yeah, pretty much was knocked after that. So everybody says that they're so proud of me, right, for going undergoing this procedure and all the things. And I always keep making the comments, yeah, I guess I did do a really bang up job, a stellar job, staying asleep the whole time. But yeah, Gina was in the waiting room. I guess that the procedure went really, really well. According to Dr. Krukoff, I didn't personally get to talk to her after the procedure, or I actually probably did and just don't remember because I was groggy and loopy from waking up from the anesthesia. But from what Gina relayed to me is that the procedure went even better than she had thought it would. They shaved off like an hour of what was expected. So typically it's like three and a half hours, give or take a half hour, depending on complications and liposuction and all the things that might, you know, need to come up while they're in there. And I guess I was really only under and in the procedure itself for 2 hours, a little bit over, which is awesome. To me, again, just shows how well that it actually did go. Gina said that, you know, Dr. Krukoff was just really impressed and excited about how well I had built up my chest muscles, and that it just made the procedure go much more smoothly, and she was able to, you know, really, I guess, place things where they needed to go, right? The incisions, the nipple grafts, all the stuff. And They apparently hugged and cried together, and it just makes my heart just feel so warm, because it just shows like how much my doctor truly cares about me, about our community, and, you know, just somebody to be that passionate about something like gender affirming care is a breath of fresh air, especially in the political climate that we are in now, where literally every transgender person, youth and adult, is under attack, and specifically their medical care being under attack. So it was just very, I don't know, just a beautiful thing to hear that she was, you know, as passionate about it as she, you know, portrays herself to be. So, Gina gets back into the recovery room with me. I don't remember a whole heck of a lot because I'm waking up and I'm groggy. But what I do remember, and what I was also told, is that I'm continuing to yap my face off the whole time that I'm waking up, like, to the point where I'm probably barely taking any breath, just talking and talking and talking. Gina did show me some videos after the fact that she had taken of me, and some of the shit that I was saying, pretty hilarious. But at one point, I said something about, you know, I don't want to ruin Dr. Krukoff's artwork, but, you know, maybe I'll get myself a little nip piercing one day. And I, in my waking, like, being, I have no desire to get nipple piercings, but apparently in my groggy state of mind, I thought that would have been a good idea. But yeah, so funny stuff. Quick, like, I guess medical, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, I can't think of the words I'm thinking of, but just like a quick, you know, overview of what they actually do when I'm under, you know, what they actually did, at least for my specific top surgery, because I was actually surprised. There's a couple people who asked me about it a little bit more in depth and did not realize, you know, like, how exactly, like, they do, what they do with my nipples and things like that. So, essentially, they, you know, make these lines that, you know, for my specific build, they're like, look like little eyes, you know, like the shape of an eye or a football, and those are the lines that they made, the top of the eye or the top of the football went just over, you know, where my original nipples lay, and then went underneath, and they just, like, kind of take that whole chunk of your body out and, you know, essentially cut out any other breast tissue in there, and if need be, do some liposuction, usually like closer back towards where the armpits are, and this is to make sure that, you know, I don't have really like extra fat and extra like skin and whatnot after you get stitched back up, because if you think about it, you know, you're taking, you know, all this extra tissue out, you're going to have this extra skin, so they have to account for all that. They take the nipples completely off, and you know, I don't know all the technical stuff that they do, but I essentially know that she shapes it a little bit, so mine probably got trimmed down very slightly to be a little bit smaller, a little bit more masculine looking, and so it's a free nipple graft. So then after, you know, they start putting me back together, and they just kind of pop those suckers right on there and stitch them in, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, somebody was curious about that, because they didn't realize that they literally took, you know, my nipples off, readjusted it, and then put it back on. But yeah, that's essentially what they did for me. And yeah, so that was the procedure as I understood it. So, moving on, I was released the same day from the hospital, and as I was literally at the door waiting for Gina to pull the car around, ready to go, I started getting a very bad spell of nausea, and I wanted to not say anything. I wanted to just ignore it and be like, I'm so close to going home. Like, Gina's about to come around with the car. I'll be fine. I'll just sit down in the car. I'll be good to go. And then I started thinking about it more, and I was like, I'm somebody who gets car sick. Probably not a good idea to just try to send it right now. So I looked up at my nurse, and I said, I don't feel great right now. And her eyes kind of got wide, and she's like, oh, yeah, you look very white and gray. And I was like, cool. She's like, we're going to go back to the room. And she, like, hastily escorts me back to the room. We ended up having to stay for, like, another hour or so. They gave me some anti-nausea medication and, you know, gave me something more to eat and drink. And, again, I'm just very grateful that I was honest and said something, because they were able to call a prescription in for me for anti-nausea, and I really, really needed that in my first few days of recovery. Yeah, that was rough. So that's something that I did not hear a lot about when people talk about their top surgery experience, is nausea. And that was probably my most uncomfortable experience throughout this whole thing. Like, yes, there's pain. Yes, there's soreness. But having spells of just being nauseous and, like, wanting to literally pass out because I feel so nauseous, you know, sweating and basically, you know, bottoming out, essentially. I had a few of those spells my first, like, 3-4 days. And so I was just really grateful to have something to kind of curb that a little bit, some medication. And I don't know, you know, if I would have had that on hand, probably not, had I not said something before we left. So I guess my advice, if somebody going under a similar procedure, is to be honest about how you are feeling at all points. You're not being needy. You're not, you know, being weak. Like, you need to advocate for yourself and remember that, you know, they're there to help you, and they can't help you if they don't know what's going on. So yeah, my time at home, like I said, it just really was a lot more challenging than I really prepared myself for. I, you know, thought I would be a little bit more able to fend for myself after, like, the second day, because they say, like, the first and second day are, like, the toughest, and usually after that, you know, you can kind of fend for yourself for the most part. So, you know, when they talk about having somebody there to be with you and, you know, give you care, they're like, for sure, day one and two, but after that, you can probably, you know, get away with not having somebody. And I'll tell you what, like I said, I feel that I have a high tolerance for pain. I feel like I'm a very capable person. And though I would have figured it out how to do it on my own had I needed to, I am so grateful that I had Gina there, and I had, you know, my mom kind of as my go-to, you know, if we needed something picked up. She helped with the dogs. But just, like, truly having Gina there to be my caregiver during this time and trusting her fully with everything and trusting, you know, that I wasn't being obnoxious or, you know, too much work for her, just was, I couldn't have done it without her. Just truly couldn't have done it without her. She literally did everything for me. I spent a lot of time horizontal, spent a lot of time laying down and just not feeling good. Again, a lot of that had to do with the nausea, which, you know, could have been a unique experience for me. And I was probably having, you know, some sort of personal reaction to, like, the anesthesia or what have you. But that really made it difficult to, like, eat and feed myself and, you know, drink and all the things. You just, when you're down for the count like that, you don't realize all the stuff and all the parts of your body that you use to, like, really function on a day-to-day basis. You know, just something as simple as getting on and off the toilet or getting in and out of bed, like, the the muscles that you use to do those things, you don't realize how many you use and how important and how, like, you know, your whole body's connected until you go through something like this and you're like, wow, everything sucks and hurts and I'm just trying to, like, get out of bed or I'm just trying to, like, wipe my ass. Like, this sucks. So yeah, tough. Another thing that I wanted to mention is I had, like, a sore throat that was pretty consistent for, like, 5 or 6 days afterwards because of the breathing tube that I had to have in during the surgery. So that's something else that I wasn't really prepared for, but that sucked as well. So I'd say, you know, again, my discomfort would have gone nausea, sore throat, and then the pain and soreness of the actual, like, procedure itself is kind of how, like, the hierarchy went from my experience. I felt really good Friday. So if I had the procedure Monday, say Monday's day one, so Friday would have been Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, day five, right? So day five, I was actually feeling really good. Stopped really being nauseous. I quit taking the pain medication. I think Wednesday night was the last time I took it, and it was just exclusively on Tylenol, and I just was like, yeah, I'm on the upswing, like, awesome, finally. Like, that was a tough first couple of days, but, like, now I'm starting to feel more like myself, less like a zombie. I can get up, I can walk around, I can, you know, do something. I ended up going downstairs and in the living room and sitting and watching TV with Gina for a couple hours, which was something I hadn't been doing because, again, I was horizontal most of the time in bed. It just felt really good. And then that night, so Friday night into Saturday morning, I woke up and I just had a ton of pain. And I asked Gina to just kind of, like, rewrap my ACE wrap because it just felt really tight and just everything was just really painful. And so she, as she's unwrapping me and I'm getting the relief of, you know, not having that binding on, the pain just hit me like a wave. And I had another episode where I got really nauseous and sweaty and, like, thought I was gonna pass out, which was very disappointing because, like I said, I thought I was on the upswing. So definitely the drop of the roller coaster that evening, that night, was quite tough. And so then Saturday was a lot tougher than Friday was, and then Sunday was a little better but not quite as good as Friday was. And I just kept, like, holding on to the idea. I was like, I'm gonna get my follow-up on Monday, get these stupid drains out, which I haven't really mentioned yet, but they're essentially were tubes coming out of the sides of my chest and draining any excess, like, fluid into these little, like, bulbs that kind of hung there. Those are extremely uncomfortable and probably the most uncomfortable part and the most painful part of everything. So, you know, just looking forward to getting those out on Monday. So Monday came, and I was able to get those drains out, which just was instant relief to not have those sticking out of my body anymore. I just felt a lot more capable, a lot more free. I graduated from the binder and bandages, or the ACE wrap and bandages, to, like, a normal medical binder, which is kind of like a shirt top to a degree. And so that's been, like, again, way more freeing, more comfortable. It's obviously still not, like, I can't run around without anything compressing, which sucks, but it was a step up in the right direction. And it's just to contain, like, the swelling and whatnot. And some days, you know, now it's Wednesday, just got everything, you know, changed up on Monday. Some hours of the day, I guess, this binder feels like it's the only thing keeping me together sometimes. It feels really relieving when it's off, but But yeah, it's very comforting when it's on. And I know a lot of people, and maybe I'll get to this point because I'm supposed to wear this for 6 weeks. So maybe I'll get to this point eventually as I continue to heal. But a lot of people are just like sick of the binder. Like, I'm sick of this compression. I'm sick of, you know, the whole point of this procedure was to never wear a binder or a bra ever again. And here I am having to do that, essentially. But for me right now, it's a comfort. It's mentally comforting to be like, okay, like, everything's good. Once I have this binder on, everything's being held in place. We're good to go. Still uncomfortable, but is what it is. I had a little bit of a unique complication. I don't know exactly what I was allergic to, but apparently I was allergic to something, because when they took off the Tegaderm tape that was around my nipple grafts and just kind of took all those bandages off for the first time, I had some pretty severe blisters and rash, and a rash underneath there. Very uncomfortable, but also not as uncomfortable as it probably truly was in reality, because I'm still numb in a lot of places, so grateful for that. But yeah, it's pretty gross. So I'm on a cream for that, and it's been like on it for since Monday, so 2 days, a little bit over 2 days now. And I think that it's starting to generally get slightly better. It's not like the big turnaround I was hoping for in a couple days, but you know, I guess again, it's got to be patient and be positive, or be excited about the positive progression, even if it's a small one. So that's like my biggest stress at this point, is just that rash that is, you know, hindering my healing in a normal manner. I have still some swelling, which is normal and should start dissipating, you know, over the next few weeks. And it's a little frustrating and painful, especially because like one side is pretty good to go, and then my other side is just like swollen and painful still. Again, I've read that it's normal. I was told that it's normal, but still is uncomfortable and a little bit worrisome. Gratefully, I get to actually see my surgeon on Friday. I only got to see the PA on Monday to get everything like all unhooked and graduated into the binder, but I get to see the actual surgeon Friday. And I'm just very excited and looking forward to that moment where, like, you know, I can just see her again and get her opinion on how I'm healing and, you know, essentially get, like, the blessing. Like, yep, you're on the right track. It's good to go. You know, do this, this, and this. Don't do this, this, and this. And just have a very confident plan moving forward, because right now I just kind of feel like the plan is a non-plan. It's just kind of, you know, doing what I can to manage the symptoms and waiting to see the doctor. And so I'm just really trying to stay patient and positive until I get to see her on Friday. So yeah, that's like my experience in a nutshell. I think I talked about it a little bit longer than I had expected to, but I think, again, you know, for the purpose of this podcast, first and foremost is to help guide other people or get connection and community and for other people who are experiencing similar things as I am in their gender journey. So if that includes top surgery, I want to be able to be as honest and transparent and detailed as possible for my community, so that, you know, they have these resources and they have these things to look forward to and be wary of, you know, to get the full picture And then two, you know, the podcast is to be educational for anybody who isn't having, you know, this experience, but is just curious about the experience. So way to talk about not talking about it too much. I don't know. But yeah, this is where I'm at in my healing journey. I am finally really starting to get excited about my results. It felt very, and has felt very surreal, because, you know, you're just kind of trying to get through the day, get through the pain and the discomfort. It's been a very surreal experience, and sometimes doesn't feel like it actually happened. So like Monday when I, you know, had my quote unquote big reveal, right? People be posting on social media about their big reveal and their, you know, their videos and how excited they are. And that wasn't necessarily my experience. I was excited to get the dressings off, and I was excited to know that things were okay because I was anxious about it. But, you know, as far as that like overwhelming feeling of like joy that people are, you know, share to have on their first reveal of the chest, like that really wasn't my experience. It's not that I wasn't joyful, it just didn't seem real. You know, I looked down a little bit and it just doesn't register. There was no mirror in the room, so it's not like I, you know, got to go check it out in the mirror. My only frame of reference for my big reveal, quote unquote, was a photograph that Gina took. And it took me, you know, a little bit to have the courage to look at it because I was anxious about how it looked because of like the rash and the blistering. Like, it's not pretty, you know. But looking at the photo then, I was like, oh yeah, that looks really good. And I'm really happy with that. And also, it doesn't seem real still. Like, it doesn't, it seems like Photoshopped. You know what I mean? So it didn't really, again, hit me how I had expected it to during my big reveal, quote unquote. With that said, since Monday, you know, I take off the binder, I have to, you know, change the dressing for the nipples, and I have to put the cream on, and by me, I mean Gina, for, you know, the rash and everything, and so I've been able to really see my chest and look in the mirror as she's, you know, doing this. I was able to take a shower, and so these moments have really brought a lot of more clarity, I guess, and, like, wow, this is real. And that has been a very joyful experience. Like, I'm finally starting to like connect with this new changed part of myself, and I'm overjoyed. Something that I don't really know how to put into words. I'm a better writer than I am a speaker. You know, take that as you will. I don't know if you're enjoying the podcast or not, but definitely much better at expressing myself in writing. And so the reason I bring that up is just like, it's difficult for me to express verbally at the moment what extent and depth of joy that I'm truly feeling, because it's just, it's overwhelming, and it's something that it's very difficult to describe. I just look forward to the day where I'm, you know, healed and can touch my chest without it being sore and tender and feel like it's going to fall apart, and looking forward to the day where I can put on, you know, a t-shirt that has to get pulled over my head for the first time, put on a tank top for the first time, you know, just see myself again with, where there's not still like I said, blisters and dried blood and, you know, bruising and just like Frankenstein-esque situation going. And I can't, for how joyful I feel now in this stage, I can only imagine how much joy I'm going to feel when I'm further along in the healing process. So again, just trying to be patient with myself, patient with the journey, but it's not, has not been easy, but it has been 110% worth it. So again, that's my journey thus far in a nutshell. Today would be day 7, 8, 9 since surgery. And again, just finally starting to feel on the upswing of things again. But I know, or I anticipate rather, to continue to be a roller coaster, and just hopefully the low dips are not, you know, as low, right? I want to take a moment to thank everybody who has reached out through text message, online, phone calls, stopped by, you know, given Gina and I food, called and texted Gina because they didn't want to bother me. Just everybody who has shown their support and their love, and, you know, I don't know, it's been overwhelming in the best way. And, you know, it's especially amazing to see and hear from people that I, you know, wasn't expecting to, people who I thought maybe wouldn't necessarily agree with what I was going through, which, you know, not their choice or, you know, something for me to be bothered by. But I guess the point is, like, it's very uplifting and makes me feel hopeful, you know, getting reached out by people that I just didn't expect. And this includes people, you know, maybe that I haven't even talked to in months or years, even reaching out and just saying, hey, I saw that you went through this, like, I'm proud of you, you know, hope everything's going well. Like, it's just been, it's been incredible. Again, special thank you to Gina for everything that you've done. There's no way to thank you other than to continue to be the best spouse to you that I can be. Sorry it hasn't been great in the last week, but thank you so much for taking care of me and being patient with me and literally doing everything to make this experience as smooth as possible. I love you. Thank you to, again, my friends, family, all the support everybody's reached out, and also thank you to the non-binary and the trans community. I've made some really cool connections with people during this experience, and, you know, some of them brief, and, you know, probably not gonna, like, necessarily continue on, and that's okay. But just, like, being able to connect with people, and some people that I might even consider to be friends now, and people that I can consider growing a friendship with online. It's just been really nice to connect with others within the community and experiencing a similar situation as I am. That's literally, again, the whole point of this podcast, right? Is to find those connections, make those connections, support each other, be like a torch, you know, in the darkness for people who, you know, need that connection and support. They don't get that where they are, or who need that guidance, or are, you know, curious and want to, you know, explore their own gender identity and things of that. Again, that's, like, that's the point. And so just to thank those people that I have connected with online, it's been a great experience all around. I really haven't had any negative interactions with anybody, and that's been awesome. Emotionally, mentally, physically, it's all been challenging, right? I explained very in depth about how the physical challenges have manifested. And I just want to briefly talk about some of the mental, emotional challenges, to, you know, piggyback off of. Yes, I have had a lot of support, from community, friends, family, you know, acquaintances, and also it has still been tough. It's been tough. For all the reasons you would expect, right? Physically traumatic, you know, change to your body, pain and dealing with that. For me, a big thing has been the fact that I've been so down and out more than I expected to, and I'm just a very active person. I'm a busybody. I'm constantly doing something. I hardly ever sit back to relax. And so it's been tough to force myself to be patient, to be present, to try to embrace the rest period that I'm getting here. Because I crave that mental, emotional stimulation, that physical stimulation. I crave, you know, the challenge of just everyday life. I know it sounds kind of goofy the way I'm explaining it, but it's just been really tough to be down and out and not myself and not really being able to take care of myself, you know, in a normal sense, and being able to do things for myself, just feeling extremely useless and just, you know, I don't know, hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel sometimes. And I appreciate, you know, Gina being patient with me and all the advice that I've been given to, like, be patient with myself and all that stuff. But it hasn't been easy. So again, all that stuff that you would expect for somebody going through surgery. But also, I had an interesting experience that I not anticipated, but like understood that it could come up. And that was just like a mini identity crisis a couple days after the fact. I'm going to do my best to explain what I'm talking about, but I want to first and foremost like reiterate it has nothing to do with regret. It has nothing to do with, you know, not identifying as trans or anything, any part of my journey. Like, still, I'm moving forward. I'm very happy with all the changes that I've gone through with low-dose testosterone, with this top surgery, socially transitioning, all the things. I'm very happy with all those things. So I don't want that to ever come into question. And I've also had, like, this weird identity crisis situation. I feel like, for the most part, I'm over it now. But there was, like, a day there that was kind of like, holy shit. You know, I've identified as a woman or female most of my life. I'm 30 years old. You know, late teens, early 20s is when, you know, I started expressing more of like, all right, I'm non-binary, but like didn't have those words. It wasn't like, hey, use this language for me. It was just more like, again, I look in the mirror, all I see is myself. I see Kez. I don't see a guy. I don't see a girl. I don't see a gendered person. I just see myself. And that's how I had described it. And have always presented more masculine, but I really just embrace the identity of just being a lesbian and being, you know, a butch lesbian, a masculine lesbian, and, you know, realizing again that gender and sexuality are, though they mingle a lot, are two separate experiences. And so, you know, coming into my non-binary identity, all that feels right. I know I'm on the right path. I'm very excited about this journey, and I'm happy, happier than I've ever been. And letting go of some of those other identities, you know, that lesbian identity, or being able to really feel like I belong in spaces, women's spaces. It's a weird transition to navigate all of that, because I still, though I've been saying like I'm queer and reclaiming that word, right? We're reclaiming the word queer. Said I'm trans masculine, non-binary. I use they them pronouns, and I'm queer/gay. Those are the words that I've been using for myself and that I enjoy using for myself. But when it comes down to it, like, I still identify as a lesbian, and that is confusing for some people, and You know, I don't know what to tell you. That's just the way that I choose to identify. Everybody's experience is different. But it's also like sometimes an issue when people identify with like conflicting stuff like that. People are like, you can't identify as a lesbian if you're non-binary or trans because, you know, a lesbian is a woman who loves a woman, you know, and they get all technical about this stuff. But like, again, it's the totality of all my experiences. I identified as a lesbian for most of my life and now I identify as non-binary, trans non-binary. And I still have that attachment to the lesbian community. I still feel part of that community and want to be part of that community, even though I also know that to a degree I'm sometimes maybe not welcome in that those spaces, especially as I present more masculine, to figure out how do I navigate being in those spaces and making sure that the people who are inhabiting those spaces also feel comfortable and, you know, don't think that there's like a man invading their space or what have you. So it can be complicated. Even within the LGBTQ plus community, there are a lot of boxes and labels that people like to stick to, and ignorance and discrimination, and just like there's a lot of mean people out there who are very ignorant and transphobic. You know, we are all under this umbrella, you know, this alphabet mafia, if you will. And there's people in the LGB part of our community that don't believe in that trans people should fall under that umbrella. Anyways, this is, I could go right way down a rabbit hole, but I'm going to try to straighten this back out, pun intended, I guess. To where my identity crisis is coming in. And that's just, you know, I've been on low dose testosterone for nearly 2 years now. I've masculinized a lot. I pass, quote unquote, as male more often than female now. I think other gender diverse queer people can still identify me as queer or assigned female at birth, non-binary, trans, all the things, and that's what I want. I crave that androgyny. And I'm happy with the changes that I've had on low-dose testosterone. But it has taken me further away from, like, these women's spaces or being, you know, perceived as belonging in these women's spaces, right? I use the men's restroom because it's safer and you know, quote-unquote more comfortable for me, even though men's bathrooms are gross. See previous podcasts. But, you know, now I've officially gotten my top surgery, right? And so it's almost like there's nothing holding me to that community anymore. I feel safe talking about things. A lot of people necessarily don't. So don't expect because I'm sharing my story in this way that other people will be as open or want to. So be respectful to, you know, every trans person that you meet and what they feel comfortable with. But for me, like, I have no desire to get bottom surgery. I'm fine with the assigned female at birth, the female anatomy that I have on my lower half. You know, so that still connects me to the community, I guess. But yeah, I don't have boobs anymore. And I'm physically a lot more masculine because of the low dose testosterone and working out. And so it just feels like another big giant step away from the community that I have always belonged to and have an attachment to and still feel like I belong there, to a degree, even though, you know, sometimes I don't feel like I belong there. So anyways, yes, complicated, confusing, exactly, that's my point. You're just listening to it, and this is what's happening inside of me. And so I'm just trying to go through all those processes, and again, it's a process. It's not something that I'm just going to be like, oh, this is A, B, C, D, right? It's not a linear journey. It's a discovery as we go along, And, but yeah, just a little tough. I think also too, like during this whole top surgery procedure and everything, I've been allowing my facial hair to grow out. And, you know, that even though non-binary people can have beards, women can have beards, anybody can have a beard is not a gendered thing, right? I guess I can't say right because not everybody believes that, but that's what I believe, is that facial hair is just facial hair. It does put you more into that category of, you know, being a man, right? It's more of a masculine feature. And so sometimes I love my beard and I really like it and I think that it looks good on me. And other times it makes me feel too masculine. It makes me feel, you know, too separate from the community that I identify with. And so I think that had something to do with it too. So I haven't shaved it off completely, but I definitely shaved it way down. So it's more like a stubble situation. And I think that I'm going to shave it off probably this week. I don't know. We'll see. But again, just like these little things adding up to big identity stuff. Because, you know, I'm trans masculine, non-binary. I identify with being more on the male side of the spectrum, right? I got top surgery. I'm taking a low dose T, all the things. And I also embrace my androgyny, want to embrace my androgyny, want to portray as a queer individual, as a not male, not female individual. And I want to still experience the joy and the spaces of being around the lesbian community. And yes, I'm embracing also like the trans non-binary community, trans masculine non-binary community, which is, you know, why I love that I'm making connections with people online and being able to do that. And I've got two, you know, very close friends who are also trans non-binary, and being able to create that community and those connections and experiences, while also navigating like the women love women spaces. And, you know, a lot of those spaces are becoming more inclusive. They'll say, you know, women and non-binary folk who still identify or do identify with the women love women community. So there are a lot of communities and spaces opening up to that, which is hopeful for me and, you know, makes me feel comfort in that. But still a process. So, at the risk of continuing to repeat myself, I just wanted to kind of share that for anybody who, again, may also be struggling with, you know, something similar to that. And you have to remember, like, your identity is your own. It should not be influenced or determined by anybody else or how society has historically and traditionally, you know, identified these identities. because we're in a new phase of life. We're trying to break these gender stereotypes, these gender roles, and, you know, what is gender? It's not male or female. It can be anything, and we can mix and match, and we can do whatever we want, and that's kind of the point. So just find the identity that resonates with you. Find the community that resonates with you, and, you know, just let it continue to be a process and do what makes you feel good. And that's why I needed to remind myself that's where I'm at. But yeah, so in case I confused any of you, I just want to reiterate that I still identify as trans non-binary, trans masculine. I'm still on low-dose testosterone. I don't have any desire to go off, and I don't have any desire at this time to increase. I now have top surgery, and I still identify as queer, but I feel more closely aligned with the lesbian community. So, yeah, that's me. in a nutshell, because I have to label myself to make it less confusing for everybody else. yeah, good times. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for being with me on this journey and for reaching out. If you have any questions, curiosities, anything at all, like, please feel free to reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at New Pronouns Who Dis Podcast. Send me a message, comment on something. I'm looking for, you know, anything that you want to hear more about. If there's something I've touched on briefly that you want me to expand on, if you have, you know, your own burning questions, if, you know, there's something that you think I should to talk about, or, you know, anything like that. I'm so open for these suggestions. I want to make this an engaging podcast, and I want you to get the questions answered that you are curious about. So please don't be shy. I am an open book, and, you know, this is supposed to be a podcast for connection and for education. And, you know, the only way to continue to do that is to get feedback on, you know, what you actually want to know more about, what you want to hear about. Anyway, again, thank you for being here, and I will catch you next time on New Pronouns Who Dis.